You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 102, tonight being recorded on this Friday. Yes, it's a day later than normal. Friday, June 3rd, 2022. Cannot believe it's already June here in Manhattan, Kansas, or wherever you're living at. Of course, the Purple Project Podcast, all about the happenings around Kansas State sports, athletics. We cover all things K-State athletics, of course, the Purple Project Podcast. For those of you who are new, welcome on board. For those of you who have been following us for how long, appreciate you for sticking with us on this K-State sports podcast. Of course, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And a little bit of business here before I bring on my co-host, usually, for the weekend edition, Alex. And of course, this podcast is partnered up by the AutoFest 2022 Rally in the Valley later this summer, August 6th, right here in Manhattan, Kansas. It's going to take place behind the Car Museum, behind the Midwest Car Collection Museum, back parking lot, where this is going to take place August 6th. And there will be a future episode, a sit down with the folks that are putting this event on. If you're a classic car type of person, this is definitely the place to, this is going to be the inaugural show for the AutoFest 2022. So this is a big get for them. It's going to be presented by, of course, Kansas JCI Senate and Broken Studs Motorsports. I have not been mentioning them in the dailies because I don't have the little script, so I definitely apologize for that. But I do have it with me on my computer now, so those are the two along with us as well. So it goes hand in hand as well. So definitely, if you're going out there later this summer to the car show, make sure you give the Purple Project Podcast a shout out. Obviously, spectators are going to be free, and to register your vehicle, it's going to be $10. There's going to be a youth power wheel show as well for the younger folks out there that are interested in coming to this event. August 6th, entrance must be 14 years of age or younger, so you cannot be older than 14. So the entry fee is $5, and all the Hot Wheels races will begin noon Central Time. Entry fee $1. First come, you know how the saying goes, folks, K-State Nation, and those other who listen to this podcast, first come to race as well. And all benefits will go to the JCI Senate Foundation, which, again, for those of you who don't know, is a nonprofit, the Scholarship Foundation as well. And I'm going to give the KSS JCI Senate in Broken Studs Motorsports a little bit of an email shout out as well. So definitely we're very excited to continue to promote throughout the summer, leading up to August 6th as well. With that, time to bring on my co-host, as usual, for the PPPW edition of this podcast, episode 102, none other than Alex Aiden. No, he doesn't live in Manhattan, Kansas. He's out there, out west, San Diego, California. Alex, what's going on?
Not too much, Eddie. Not too much. I am, Friday evening here, and all is good, ready for the weekend, and, ready to talk K-State sports with you. Things beginning to slow down a little bit as we kind of hit the summer months. So you and I were going to be able to dive in and talk about some really compelling topics that we may not have been able to within the season. So I'm looking forward to that here in the coming months. But baseball's winded down. Season's over for them. They finished season 500. And the basketball team landed another recruit, so I think they're up to 8 players now, if I recall. So, That's kind of what's going on. Dive in and talk K-State sports with you.
Yeah, yes, sir. And the topics are definitely going to be on topic as well this summer as well. As bring hoping to bring on some more guests on the podcast. Obviously, I am going to be reaching out to Keithan sometime next week to see when he's going to be able to come back on the podcast. Speaking of topics, to talk about more of the NIL stuff that we got into the first time that he was on the podcast. Well, as far as other things as well, obviously there's key storylines this summer already early, just a few before we talk baseball here. Avery Johnson sighting continues. Did listen to the PowerCat podcast earlier today, the episode with Ryan Wallace and Avery Johnson there, as the it looks like I'm not going to get my hopes up too much because you know how recruiting goes. For example, Anton Davis. We'll see what happens there with that. All I seem to be on that right now. Obviously, Alex, you mentioned that baseball is a wrap for this year. They wrapped up last week. We'll get into that here in a second. Track and field is still going on. Next week, the NCAA Outdoor Championships going down. If you want more coverage of that, I will be keeping track of that next week on the Purple Project Podcast Dailies, which will be going down to 3 days a week, plus a Saturday after the Track and Field Championships come to a close next week as well. So, yep, things are kind of slowing down a little bit, but things are heating up for the K-State, for this K-State podcast as well. So a lot to kind of dissect throughout the summer, and we kind of talked about this a little bit off-air. The 3-Mall Pod really brought up to light some of the topics that I'm kicking the can down the curb, saving those for the summer as well. So definitely looking forward to some compelling conversations here, especially relating to football, as football will be here, Alex, before we know it.
Oh, yeah. Football's right around the corner. You mentioned it, you know, we're now into June. Next thing you know, it's going to be for, fall practice, and we're going to be ready to roll. The first game is, gosh, it's June, July. We're 3 months away, Eddie. About 3-ish months away from the first game. So, I mean, not that far. It'll be here quicker than you think. And you mentioned recruiting, and you mentioned Avery Johnson. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that obviously is a hot topic right now among K-State circles, because it sounds like, based on everything I've heard, that he's likely going to make a decision by the end of the month. And that would be really the biggest quarterback K-State's landed since Josh Freeman. Back when he came to K-State in the mid 2005, I think was when that was. So it's been a minute. It's been a minute since K-State landed a quarterback like that. Boy, could they use him. And I think we've also heard multiple people mention this, Eddie. Could really be a domino effect for K-State. There's a lot of – they've already landed a couple big-time in-state guys, and they've beaten Iowa State in a couple big-time recruiting battles. But there's some guys out there. There's the offensive lineman. We also consider Notre Dame. There's Dylan Edwards, who we all know is considering Oklahoma and K-State. And there's some other guys out there. There's some guys in the Kansas City metro area. So definitely some guys – could end up being a really big recruiting class, Eddie, and I think June could be an active month, potentially, for K-State and landing some of those recruits. So it'll be interesting to see how that falls. But yeah, football's right around the corner, and looking at this year's team, Eddie, things are pretty wide open in the Big 12, and you're right, we'll talk about it more in the summer here, but things are pretty open in the Big 12, and K-State's probably have the best team they've ever had under Chris Kleiman.
Yeah.
And I think there's an expectation to elevate what he's done. And we know he's won 8 games a couple of times. I know I'll sneak peek, Eddie, when we do our predictions, sneak peek, mine may be over 8 wins, because that is what I expect when you look at the roster and you look at the conference and you look at what Kleiman's doing. So it's a big year. It's going to be a big year for Chris Kleiman. It's going to be a big year for this football program. And I'm not saying that they're going to win the Big 12. I'm not saying that they're going to go to Arlington. I'm not saying they're going to do anything like that. But they are going to have to be more competitive than they were last year. And yes, last year's team won 8 games, but they did not knock off any of the top teams in the conference.
Yeah.
Gonna have to be different this year. We'll be able to discuss that. Derek Young pounded it to death. This team, they have 3 All-Americans. You got to be able to take advantage of that talent, the talent that you've got coming back. And they got all their best players coming back. So we've known this for a while. It's been kind of the back burner. Now that you've got Andrew Martinez, you can kind of move forward with that. Depending on what he does, that's still a big question mark. But you're right, Eddie. It's coming up soon, and there's going to be a lot for us to talk about over the summer with that football team.
Yes, my favorite episode, the predictions episode, that will be down the road as well. And yeah, you got to take advantage of the talent that you got here. And definitely, for sure, K-State definitely knows, as long as K-State Nation, the fans here, students, fans, alumni, obviously, this is going to be Chris Klieman's best team since he arrived on site here in Manhattan, Kansas. And you got to take advantage of it while you have it.
Yeah, and your best shot, because they're not going to be as good
the
next year from a talent perspective, because they're losing a ton of these guys.
Yep.
And call me crazy, but I actually think I'm now leaning towards this being Deuce's last year. Initially, I was leaning the other way. I kind of feel like Deuce has a breakout year. There's nothing else for him to do at college, and there's nothing he can do to drive up his draft stock, so I don't know why he would stay unless he just genuinely wants to keep playing college football. But I don't know, and I could be wrong. Maybe Deuce is back, but I just feel like you got a shot at, you're going to lose Adrian, you could lose Deuce, you're probably going to lose Malik, you're going to lose Daniel Green, you're going to lose some defensive guys, you could lose Felix, you're going to lose Julius Brents probably and Echo Boydo. I mean, you're going to lose a lot of guys, a lot of good guys.
A lot of those guys could, as D.Y. mentioned in that pod, that 3-mile pod, John Kurtz, Cole Manbeck, Derek Young. He projected, it's early projection, but he mentioned that possibly 6 or 7 guys could go in the NFL draft next season, next summer.
I agree 100% with that as well. And Fitz said something similar too, like a month ago. And Casey could have, Cooper Beebe could be a first round pick. if he has a good year. Like this team could have potentially 6 to 8 draft picks. They could have potentially 3 All-Americans. They've got a 5th-year quarterback, and I mean those are the stars kind of aligning for you, and you got to take advantage of that window because as I mentioned, you're not gonna have that same talent the next year. You can have a great 2023 recruiting class, and we hope that they do have their best ever under Klieman. Fingers crossed. We'll see what happens. But next year in 2023, there's gonna be a dip. And so, K-State can't just be rolling out 3 All-Americans every year. That's not realistic for K-State and what they do. So you've got to be able to take advantage of those moments. Again, I'm not saying, Eddie, they got to go win the Big 12. Not saying that. But I'm saying that we've heard Jerome Tang talk about elevate a lot with the basketball program. Well, it's time for Chris Klieman to elevate the football program with this level of talent. And, if he can win 9-plus games with this team, I think people will really jump on board the Chris Klieman train, and then I think that would allow for K-State fans to be more content with a potentially 6-7 win season next year when the talent may not be as high. If Chris Klieman wins 7-8 games with this team and goes win 7-8 games or 7 games with next year's team, the fans aren't going to be too terribly content with that. Not that there's anything wrong, Eddie, with winning 7 or 8 games. That's above average. That's above average. That's good. But I think fans want a little more. Yeah, I think they want a little more, especially when you get the seasons like this upcoming season where you could potentially have top 3, top 4 talent in the conference.
Yeah, and just kind of an example, we were talking off air a little bit before I hit the record button. Yeah, again, we'll talk more about this, but since we're on the train a little bit, we'll just roll with the punches here. But yeah, you got to take advantage of the talent. Yeah, let's just use the Atlanta Braves as an example, right? We have the talents there, but the record, it does not show it right now, uh-huh. Right? Alex Anthopoulos, the other AA, the GM for the Atlanta Braves, for those of you who don't know, mentioned and spoke to the media about there are obviously there are media concerns from the Atlanta sports media anyways about, okay, why are we still get off the slow starts, whatnot. And he mentioned, you know, the talent speaks for itself. Well, the talent speaks for itself where we're sitting here 25 and 27 right now, and we still haven't even gotten to a three-game winning streak yet, and we're in a scoreless battle with the Rockies as I sit here and speak to you guys right now on the top of ninth inning, dead even at no score at Coors Field. What a worry to be saying that. But yeah, so the talent, yeah, the talent's there, but the talent ain't doing much right now when you're playing like a little league baseball team and not making sound fundamental plays in the field. It just doesn't make sense. So in relation to K-State, you can't settle for, and somebody, I'm not going to call them out, not going to do it, not yet anyway, somebody on the Powercat podcast, even though, yes, he was pessimistic a little bit, I know him a little bit from my going church days at MCOOC, but his early projections was 8-4, something like that. Listen, I mean, the talent is pretty much obvious. Everybody's starting to notice that. Even the national media is starting to get pick it up. Even though, yes, it's all little old Manhattan, Kansas. Yeah, they're gonna be, yeah, let's not talk about those guys. Well, now the national media, with the summer now is here pretty much. Now they're starting to get small keys here and there that, hey, you know, this team, this K-State football team might have a little something.
That's a pretty good roster now that we're actually looking at it on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
On a screen.
Yep. Well, obviously, we'll talk again more later this summer. Oklahoma breaking in new coach Brent Venables. Texas being as they are, they might not be hanging around.
Texas,
this might be their
to win it, according to Vegas, Eddie. It's not even Oklahoma. Texas is favored to win the conference right now, according to Caesar Sportsbook.
I'm not going down that road right now.
And
I don't have the time.
That's insane.
Yeah.
First off, that's ridiculous. Oklahoma should be favored to win the conference. Second off, it's not Caesar's fault. They're just trying to make money. I understand. But that's ridiculous. That is a 5-1 vote. I get it. Quinn Ewers, he's a good quarterback. And, yes, Texas is going to be a lot better. But, you know, I think every year people get caught up with the glitz and the glamour of Texas. And I think the point is, if Texas is picked to win the conference, I think that tells you how open the conference is. I think that speaks for itself. Because you mentioned Oklahoma. I think that most are under the blitz will at least be down a little bit with Brent Venables coming in and kind of some of the talent that they lost with Lincoln Riley departing.
Yeah. So that's just a glimpse right there of Texas being favored. I did not know that.
Ridiculous.
I did not know that. And we somehow lost to them last year, which I still can't get over that. Which kind of, speaking of domino effects, yeah, that had a big domino effect in this coaching staff. So, but yeah, so a lot to look forward to on this podcast, obviously, with football. And there's a whole bunch to look forward to with that leading up to the hype of the first game of the season. Here, it's going to be here before you know it, so definitely excitement, but at the same time a little nervous of how it could definitely go two ways. We can hit on 9-10 win season, or it could be the same old with these 8-7-6 game season. So
if the season ends and K-State's 7-5 getting preparing for a bowl, I don't think you and I will be on here being like, there's something to build on. No, I don't think that will be our problem.
Maybe
after year one, but not after this team, not after this year.
Yeah, not after this year. And obviously with the question marks still on who's going to be here in the recruiting class, all back to that, the 2023 class. Yeah, so we'll see. But, yeah, a lot ahead for K-State football. Chris Klieman and company, Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator, and Joe Klineman, the defensive coordinator for K-State. A lot to look forward to there. And speaking of elevating, Pete Hughes and his baseball team needs to elevate their team.
A lot of elevation going on in that program, man.
They need some help. They need some elevation right now. Last week on the podcast, episode 101, if you have not listened to that, I would suggest you download it, listen to that, and tell your fellow K-Staters about the Pearl Project podcast, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. They just came off of beating eliminating West Virginia. So, and then Oklahoma, they had their chances in this game to force a second game against Oklahoma, and they did not do that. They lost 4-3 and puts another deep somehow. I don't know how Pete Hughes and his team keep doing it, but they know how to win in the postseason, but they just are too inconsistent in the regular season. I just can't add those things up whatsoever there. Lost to Oklahoma 4-3, which ended K-State season for good there as well. And obviously some notes here to wrap up here. The Wildcats, the baseball team, reached the semifinal round in this tournament, the Phillips 66 Big 12 Championship Tournament, for the second consecutive year. K-State is now 3-7 against Oklahoma in this tournament. And that was their first meeting last weekend since 2016. Yeah, speaking of Oklahoma ends our season in baseball. How about that? The Wildcats, now 19-24 all time in this tournament. And of course, OU leads. I'm not going to go deep into that. K-State. And I said this multiple times, whether it's on this weekly edition or the dailies, late in the season anyways. They started the year at Arlington and obviously ends in Arlington and at Globe Life Field, Alex.
Yep.
2-5 record. In Arlington, Globe Life Field this season, K-State finished with a record against ranked opponents, 4-13 away from home. Against ranked opponents this year, yeah, that's 4-13 away from Toyton Family Stadium. And this has been a recurrence on this podcast. I don't know how many times we said it. They have to win on the road. We said it in the beginning of the year. They have to win on the road. PQ said it in his little pregame. Media before the season started. We're going to be a good ball club, right? We have two in a row. Well, you still haven't done that. 8-22, and you're 2-5 on neutral site contests this year. And Pete Hughes, with his fourth year completed here at K-State, I can't believe it's that long already.
Yeah.
5-6 in the Big 12 tournament in his four seasons here in Manhattan. A lot of below 500 records there, reading off of there. So, I mean, he inherited some good transfer this year, Pete Hughes. He nailed that for sure. For one example, Dom Johnson. I'll have his numbers here in a moment here. But Alex, yes. So, another subpar year ends at a 500 ball club for this K-State baseball team here. And as I back up here to my notes here, I had it. I'm going to have to go back while you're talking. But, yeah, 29-29 this year. And I don't feel like, honestly, this baseball team has moved from last year. I can't tell whether they're trending in the right direction or they're going backwards. I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Eddie. I think, and I'll get into this here in a minute, I think what's the most frustrating part of this K-State team, as I've mentioned it time and time again, Eddie, but how many times they have beaten themselves this season is just maddening. They literally beat themselves in both of their losses in the Big 12 tournament. And it was great. It was great that they were able to make the semifinals, and they played really well down in Arlington for the most part. But look, when they lost that initial game to Texas Tech, they had a three-error inning that open the door for Texas Tech. Texas Tech's able to take the lead and win the game because of that three-error inning. And then you're in the Oklahoma game, and K-State's winning, and they lose that game because they just completely botched a ball in the outfield. And it wasn't an error. And it wasn't an error, but a ball that is hit to deep center, and it's when the center fielder comes in a good 4 or 5 steps and realizes, oh, crap, and then all of a sudden starts, you know, trying to catch back up to it, does catch back up to the ball, and then the ball bounces off your glove, and then you give up 2 runs and you lose by 1. Look, that's not an easy play to make, Eddie, but that's a play you should make. You absolutely should make. And they mentioned it on the broadcast. Eddie, K-State had the deep worst defensive ranking in the Big 12 this season. Shocker. Oh, I'm stunned. I am not stunned at all. That team was horrific on defense this year. I don't mean to sound bad, Eddie, but that team was that might be the worst defensive worst defensive baseball team I've ever seen. They were horrible. They were horrible defensively, and I am not here to lay into them about that. But how many times they had 5 errors in a game? How many times they had 3 errors in the game? How many times? Just so many errors, and not even errors, but like I said, misplayed balls. You know, bad routes, right? Bad routes to the ball. Not putting themselves in even a position to make plays. At times, like in that Oklahoma game, where no, that wasn't an error. It ended up being a hard play, but it ended up being a hard play because they made it a hard play
yeah.
for themselves.
Yeah.
What was the routine ball? So still, they made the semifinals, and that was a good. But like, stepping back and looking at the season as a whole, last year the baseball team, they went 34-23, right? So they finished 11 games over 500. This team finishes at 29-29. They finished 500. So you're 11 games above 500 to 500. Look. We can talk, Eddie, about what our expectations were for the baseball team going into the season, but I'm going to tell you what Pete Hughes said before the season began. He said this is a team that their goal is to make it to Omaha. That's what he said. He said that's this team's goal. If that is their goal, I'm going to hold them to that standard, Eddie. If their goal is to make it to Omaha, I'm going to hold them to that standard. Some people are probably like, Alex has been so hard on him, I've been hard on him because I have expectations for him this year. And in years past, we may not have had expectations for the baseball team. It's like, oh, you know, whatever. But I have expectations of this team. They had a good year last year. They were on the bubble. They had a lot of good transfers. And Pete Hughes said our goal was to get to Omaha. Did I think they'd get to Omaha? No, I did not think they'd get to Omaha. But did I think that they could potentially build off of what they did last year? Yes, I did, because the K-State baseball team was really putting out the message that's where they were at. That was the plan. So with that said, do I think this baseball team was worse than last year's team? I think that's where it gets tricky, Eddie, because this team, and I'll give them credit for this, ton of injuries. They dealt with a ton of injuries this year. There was a point in time where they were missing 3/5 of their starting lineup, starting rotation. They were missing handful of players in the starting lineup, and so they were down. I mean, they were down guys good chunks of the season. So it was kind of hard to gauge really the kind of the talent on the ball club at times just because of the injuries. And also, I think the other X factor, and I've talked about it some this year, is the schedule. Last year's schedule was significantly easier. If anybody remembers, They had to really kind of redo their schedule last year because COVID threw everything, you know, out of whack. And he wanted them to get all their games, Eddie. So he was scheduling whoever he could schedule. And a lot of times it was not good. You know, it was maybe not your best teams. I mean, you know, going back and peeking at last year's schedule, you know, they were playing teams like Western Michigan, Eastern Illinois, Northern Illinois, South Dakota State, New Mexico, Arkansas Pine Bluff, Northern Colorado. I mean, those are the types of teams they were playing last year in the non-con. And then you jump to this year, and they're playing Arizona, right? They're playing Auburn. They're playing Michigan. They're playing Virginia Tech. They're playing Cal State Fullerton. They're playing Nebraska. I mean, they're playing Air Force. I mean, they're playing good, really great, good baseball teams. UC Irvine, that was a good team.
Yeah, that's a good team, yeah.
Again, you know, that level of play in non-conference this year was so much higher than last year's because of the way the schedule came out. K-State just played a brutal schedule. And the Big 12 was really good this year. It was a good conference. So it was just hard to gauge. Okay, is this team really worse than last year's team? Because I really don't think that they were. I really don't, Eddie. I think that the injuries, the schedule were two big factors into it. But with that said, you finished 11 games above 500 last year, and you were 500 this year. That's 11 games worse. I mean, Well, that's not technically, that's not 11 games worth. Technically, that's like six. It's five and a half, 6 games worth. But
Still worse either way.
It's still worse. You took a significant step back. And it's not just that, Eddie. I mean, they had a worse record in conference play. They won 11 games in conference play last year. They won 8 this year. Again, you can make an argument that the conference is more difficult this year than it was last year. But still, you finished 8-16 in conference play this year. You wanted to get better on the road. Last year, you went 3-12 on the road. This year, you went 6-17 on the road. So you were actually worse on the road this year than you were last year. You got more wins, but your percentage was lower. So you didn't make any ground there. And they went. They had a good record neutral last year. They were 7-4 on neutral fields last year. They were 2-5 this year, as you mentioned. So they were worse on neutral fields. They did not get better away from Toyton. They won at Toyton. They went 21-7 this year at Toyton Family Stadium after going, 24-7 last year?
I think it was 24, you're right.
So, they continued to dominate Toyton. They had 2 great years at Toyton, but they just could not win away from Manhattan, and it was a problem. So I just think it's frustrating because this team beats themselves so often, and it's just like, oh my gosh. How many games are you going to lose walking batters, hitting batters, with fielding errors? You can't finish last in the Big 12 in fielding percentage. I mean, you can't do that, Eddie, and expect to be a winning ball club. You can't give schools like Texas Tech and Texas and Oklahoma and whoever else you want to throw in there, you can't. You know, expect to be able to beat them when you're giving them 4 or 5 outs an inning. You know, that's just not going to happen. That's not a recipe for success. And so this offseason, Eddie, K-State has got to get better in that department. They have got to improve the fundamentals. It's way easier said than done, but Pete Hughes has got to figure out a way to make sure to get his pitchers to pitch with more control and to get his fielders to be more defensively sound on the field. Because there's nothing more frustrating than just beating yourselves and just shooting yourself in the foot because you're just not doing the fundamentals very well. And K-State did not do the fundamentals very well this year, Eddie. That is a little sloppy baseball team. It's the best way to put it. They were just a sloppy baseball team. You're not going to win in the Big 12 with a sloppy baseball team. So it's a big offseason. It kind of sounds similar to what we were saying about Jeff Nitti and the women's basketball team a year ago. A year ago. And I would love for this to kind of play out the same way. They really took a big step after I made similar complaints about them. But, you've got to come out and you have got to be more fundamentally sound. And I think that, look, do I expect Kate State to, wow, I don't know what happened to me there, my throat. I don't expect Kate State to be Texas, right? I don't expect them to be Texas Tech. You know, I don't expect them to be Oklahoma, be TCU necessarily, like these programs, or Oklahoma State. But I expect them to be able to compete when they've got a good team from time to time, kind of like we were talking about the football team. You know, I expect them to be able to have a season like that every once in a while for them to be able to rise up and have a chance to win a Big 12 championship every now and again. I expect them to be able to compete in the conference better than finishing 7th out of 9, because if 9 teams have, you know, a baseball program. I expect more than that. And like I said, I'm not expecting a Big 12 championship every year. But, Pete Hughes was brought in to kind of right the ship. Things kind of got to the overhead hill. They were really struggling. And he was brought in to kind of fix that. And you know, he's taking steps in the right direction, but they're not there yet, in my opinion, Eddie. And it just feels like they kind of stalled out this year. From the momentum that they got the year before in the COVID season. So, you know, I just hope that they can improve and that they can grow. They can get better defensively and that they can bring in some nice players this offseason and kind of, you know, maybe have a healthier year next year. When all said and done, hopefully the season ends well, because I don't think that Pete Hughes is sitting on a hot seat at the moment, Eddie. But I think that the seat has a heat warmer, and Gene is intrigued with the heat warmer. He's intrigued with that lever that you flip on the side of the seat to heat it up. So he's not on a hot seat, Eddie, but he's on a seat that has a heat warmer on it. and we are aware that there's a heat warmer on that seat. So how about that for an analogy for him? But you know, I think they need to take a step forward next year. And if they don't take a step forward next year, I think that you need to begin to look at SPTU as the guy to really to lift this program to that next level that we expected him to do. Because it's great that they're better. They're still finished in the bottom half of the Big 12, and I can't imagine that's what Gene envisioned as, like, this is where we want to be. We want to finish sixth. Like, this, that's it. Like, we brought Pete Hughes in to finish sixth in the Big 12 every year. That's not what he brought him in to do. He brought him in to bring him back to the team that we saw, Eddie, and maybe this is partially just because they had a winning baseball club when I was there, but he brought him in. This is the team that won the Big 12 not that long ago. It was 10 years ago, which seems long ago, but it didn't seem long ago.
Senior year, baby. Yep.
That doesn't feel like long ago to me. Maybe it is long ago. It's not that long ago. They won a Big 12 championship not that long ago. And they were a game away from making it to Omaha not that long ago. Literally lost by one run in the deciding game to go play in the College World Series. I mean, this team has been there, and they've done that. And I mean, we shouldn't act like they haven't been there and they can't do it just because they stopped after that, you know? Has K-State baseball been dominant? No. It's never been a dominant force, a dominant program. But this program has reached that peak. And those pinnacles, they had someone taken in the first round last year, Eddie. I mean, this team is capable of producing good athletes and winning at the highest level. They've done it. You know, and they didn't do it that long ago. So I don't think you should be settling for that. And I'm not saying that PU should be fired or anything like that. I want to see what he does next year. I'm eager to see what he does next year. I just think that this program needs to take a step. They need to show signs of improvement next year that we just didn't see this year that I was expecting. And like I said, schedule, injuries, I think it's all valid. But when you watch them play, it was a lot of sloppy baseball, and that's what concerns me. And I just hope that they can clean it up next year.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
So what you're telling me out of all that, basing on the records, now again, it goes back to what I said before I hit the record button on this podcast tonight. The Braves, right? Your record says what it is. 25-27. Right now. Well, actually not right now. The season's over. K-State baseball. Last year. 34-win season. This season, 29. That's telling me you took a step back. I'm just gonna call it what it is right now. But let's just hop on the positive before we finish up baseball here. To remind folks, for those of you who do not remember, I did post a daily on this. There were four Wildcats that received all-conference accolades from this year. Obviously, Dylan Phillips was on the All-Big 12 second team, and also did one this week on him reaching the All-Big 12 first team. So that's a bright spot there, and he is coming back, looks like, for his senior season. Kalen Culpepper, the talented freshman, made the all-freshman team there. Nick Goodwin was honorable mention, along with, I'm kind of stunned with this one, Dom Johnson. He should have been first team.
How is he honorable mention?
He should have been first team. What the hell? What the hell were the Big 12 voters were doing on this one? I have no idea.
Dylan Phillips was obviously... He was obviously K-State's best player, in my opinion, but I thought Dom was number two. I really thought he was their second player.
See, now I put Dom above Dylan. For argument's sake, I would put Dom ahead of Nick Dylan.
Okay. I'd be willing to hear that. Dom was on fire at the end of the season. Dom was scorching.
Once he stepped on campus, once he stepped onto this team, obviously he transferred, I believe, from Oklahoma State, if I remember correctly, but he was impact player right away.
Firecracker, right? He's so much, the energy that he just shot into that team. He played like his hair was on fire in a good way, not a bad way.
Yeah. So, I mean, Dylan Phillips, obviously, he's going to be something that we found about him this year. He can pitch, and he's a closer. So,
yeah, he can pitch and hit.
And hit. So we found out about him. So Pete Hughes at least got something going on that end. He has unlocked Dylan Phillips. So potential. So
Dom Johnson's only a sophomore too, right? So
yes, yeah.
I think it's important to bring, like, you're bringing, we kind of talk about the football team. You're bringing some of your better players back. You know what I mean? So again, I think that even more reiterates the importance Pete Hughes to kind of step it back up next year. If you got Dylan, you're gonna have two best players back, likely. We assume. Mm-hmm. You never know in college, right? But you assume you're gonna have Dylan Phillips and Dom Johnson back. That's a pretty good foundation.
Yeah, uh-huh, yep. And kind of to finish it up here, the Big 12 record, you mentioned it here, still on the bottom half, way on the bottom of the Big 12 barrel there, 8-16. Not to keep the bad news rolling here. So, yeah, I mean, next year is going to be interesting. Let's just put it that way for this team. Yeah, they got to show some signs of a rebound. I'll call it the rebound year next year. They have to rebound. I know they can play a little better than what they have. I know tougher schedule, whatnot. Still can't make really excuses there. You had opportunities throughout the season to win baseball games, and you didn't get it done. That's just pretty clear, cut and dry, in my opinion there. So
you are what your record says you are.
Yep, exactly. So we'll see what happens, obviously. Another big offseason for the manager of this team, Pete Hughes. Go back to see. I'm sure he'll go back and look at the positives and definitely the negatives there, like the tournament there. We had opportunities to possibly make an even bigger run there than you should have. So
yeah,
there's
because they would. I mean, if you look at the field, Eddie, in the tourney, most top teams were knocked out. I mean, if K-State would beat Oklahoma, then they would have played. What was it, TCU? And they were like a 4 seed or something like that. I mean, like the top 3 seeds were, I think, knocked out of the tournament. I mean, maybe it was only the top 2. And K-State was, I think the top 2 seeds were knocked out. K-State was playing. Oklahoma was a 3 seed. So, I mean, if you would have gotten past Oklahoma, once again, like, hypothetically, your toughest opponents are out. So, you're right, Eddie. I mean, that could have been a... That could have been something. And if K-State could have found a way again to finish that game off against Tech, and to beat Oklahoma, we could be having a different conversation right now. The way the dominoes fell with those teams at the front. But the dominoes didn't fall that way, and K-State did beat themselves in a couple of games, and they're going home 500.
Yep, so hey, it is what it is now, so you can't do nothing about it now. You gotta go back, and you missed an opportunity there to really make something big there. So another season in the books here at K-State for baseball is concerned, flipping the switch over to the hard court. Jerome Tang did get signed another player from the transfer portal, and David Gasson from Virginia Tech, another Power Five guy, obviously, in his numbers. He, from what I've read anyways, just a quick summary, not going to dive in and do a deeper dive on him right now. That actually, speaking of that, that should be out right now. I did a daily on Mr. Gasson signing, so I'm not going to do too much deeper diving into that. You can download and check that out. And I did two dailies today because of usually the Pro Project Weekly edition is usually out right now. And since we're recording this episode right now, episode 102, it won't be out till tomorrow night or sometime around tomorrow. So yeah, that is why two dailies are out today for your enjoyment. And then be out and look out for the weekly edition on Saturday, which is tomorrow. But yeah, Gasson, another Power Five get again. The numbers don't stand out to me. Yes, he was a big key contributor to Virginia Tech's big stunning run in the ACC tournament. They were the ACC champions this past year, and he was a big contributor out of this. Now,
that's true. They were ACC champs.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep. Huge contributor out of that. So.
Yeah.
It brings up, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast tonight, about 8 players signed, but my concern is, and we're getting a discussion right now on the basketball talk, is, and I heard there's one of the questions that fits in the game we're talking about on the Power Gap podcast that I listened to today. I got caught up on both questions episodes there, which they do a really good job. I really like that. The fact of the matter is, nobody stands out besides the two returnees. And obviously, we talked about it here on this podcast as well. You brought it up that there were three Jerome Tanks, there are three potential players to win games next season. One of them is not here anymore. That's Nigel Pack. He gone somewhere else with that big money into Miami, right? That leaves Marquise Noel and Ishmael Should. Now, they made the comment earlier about, and I totally, as I think about this, been thinking about this, Marquise Noel, last year, he went through his ups and downs, right? Is he ready? This is what I've been thinking about. Is he ready? Is these two guys, like Jerome Tang and his coaching staff coming in here, giving them high praise, as they should, lean on these two guys, not only off the court, but especially on the court? Marquise Noel last year has adventures. I mean, made big plays in big moments, and then had his squirrel moments, right? Penetrate too deep, throwing the ball away. In Iowa State, apparently, I didn't know this until they were talking about it, made his own decisions and nearly cost us the Iowa State game on the road before he made a big shut corner pocket three to seal the deal on the Cyclones there. That's not going to sit well with Tang. I would hope not anyways, for that matter. So that's the question right now. And no offense to Tosh Manning, Jarrell Colbert, Cam Carter, especially Carter and Colbert coming from the SEC.
Yeah.
Dorian Finister's coming in as freshman. Naquan Tomlin, Tosh Manning, David Gasson. No offense on these guys, but really, we're talking about Marquise Noel and Ishmael Should. Now, Ishmael Should was here and there too last year as well. If you're gonna have these guys be leaders of your club, oh, obviously, Marquise Noel, let's give him praise first. He's done a tremendous job of being a leader off the court, and he's taking big steps to do that. And we see the post on Twitter, obviously. I'm sure you have as well, Alex, on that. He's done a good job doing that. The bigger question, flip the script, what can he do on the court? Can he improve his game? Obviously, I was going to say something. Maybe it'll come back to me here in a second here. Oh, man, I had a good point. Now I lost it. But, yeah, can he be more a consistent player for this team? And you said it last week. Pretty sure you said it last week. He's our leading scorer in this game. And you already missed out on this team. You already missed out on Antoine Davis. I mentioned that off the recording before we hit the record button there. Sean Phillips, we missed out on that. So Fitz already is in losing mode. My guy Fitz, that the first year is going to be a rough year because we don't have that big threat still. And I mean, Colbert, Carter, you know, these guys are unproven. To me, they're unproven. Again, circling back to Eli Anderson, I'm sorry to be a recording fly on the wall, but again, I have to keep bringing this up. These guys are unproven, and we can't really say anything until we get these guys on the practice court, and eventually this fall see them in action in Bramlage or on ESPN Plus, Big 12 Now Network. There's a little shameless plug there, but yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned, but again, it goes back to the whole, you know, Bruce Weber doing a bang-up job in recruiting, that sarcastically. Enough players, and pretty much all the guys said, see ya, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be part of this rebirth of the K-State men's basketball team whatsoever. So now you got these, and Gasson is going to, I think, at least from what I've read in the stats I talked about, is going to be an impact player off the bench, I think. Sorry, that's a little bit of an early prediction right there, but that just came what I came off of anyway. But, yeah, so, but again, circling back full circle to these guys that return, Noel and Masood, right? Can you get these guys day in, day out? Marquise Noel, for example, right? 18 from him, something like that. 18 to 20 points. Can you get Ish Masood? Let's say, let's throw out a number, 15 to 16 points a game, and hope that a Cam Carter, Drew Kubert, again, you get the drip, K-State Nation. You get the drip where I'm going with this. Can the other guys round in the shape? And obviously, you're going to have time in an early non-con to do that. But obviously, you're going to have some tough games in there, as we talked about already with Butler. I got them this fall come up as well. So there's, to me, I wouldn't say a cause. It's way too early. I know it's early June, but not cause for concern yet. But just a little bit of one, you got to wonder. I mean, you don't have that big guy, that big scoring threat for K-State yet, in my opinion. Unless somebody can prove me wrong. If you, Naquan Tomlin, somebody, Dorian Finister, right? You come on in and score the basketball, right? I just don't see. It's probably overreaction Monday, whatever. You can sit on the couch and do Monday night quarterback and whatever, but that's what I'm coming off as right now. But I just can't see. Obviously, you're going to have your ups and downs on the road in your first year, but you don't have that wow. You don't have that wow factor in a guy that, oh, we have to look after this guy. We have to game plan around a point guard or something like that. So yeah, that's kind of my question. That's kind of my question to you, Alex. There, I know this new coaching staff, Drum Tang, getting them new shoes, whatnot, to these guys. Yeah. I'm sorry to.
It's funny that you brought that up.
I don't want to bash them or anything early. I know they haven't even stepped on the court yet. This coaching staff yet. And again, somebody brought this up on the PowerCat podcast earlier, that, you know, Coach Tang, he won the press conference. We talked about it here on this podcast. He won the press conference, yeah. No doubt about it. But again, it goes back to these players and all of Bruce Weber's players are basically said, see ya, peace out, I'm done, I'm not going to be a part of this rebuild. So you're left with basically picking up the pieces and trying to figure out. Now, I don't know if there's still time or not to try to get another guy, or I'm sure they're still looking. They're still looking for that guy still that can score the basketball. But you got to wonder, man, if we go out to go to war, go to battle on the court with these guys, damn. We're going to be in for another one of these long seasons.
Eddie, you sound concerned. You sound concerned. Look, here's the deal with the best. First off, I get 100% what you're saying. I will say this to the players. I really don't think the coaching staff wanted them. I really don't think that Jerome Tang and the staff wanted the Bruce Weber leftovers. I don't think they had any interest in, Luke Zupke. I just don't think they had much interest in, who else was in there? Davion Bradford.
Let's see. I can go down the line here. Casey Eziegu.
Eziegu. Like, I don't think they had any interest.
Carson Lingard.
No offense to those players.
Logan Landers. No.
Yeah, I don't think that there was a spot for Logan Landers on this roster. I just don't.
Selton Miguel. Yep.
Selton Miguel. I still don't think they would have. Selton, maybe. But I still don't think so. When Jerome Tang said there were three players that we were interested in, we kept two of them. I believe him. I think that.
I believe him in that. Yeah.
I think he looked and said, okay, let me look at this roster. Okay, Nigel Pack, Marquise Noel, and Ish Masood are the three guys that we can do something around. The rest of them, they don't really fit. They really don't wanna, really not interested in them. Probably see if they can, probably encourage them to go elsewhere. I really think that's what they did. But with that, here's how I'd say. You're right. K-State does not have the scorer, or would maybe be the best way to put it. They don't have the guy who, right now on the roster, who can go out and drop 30 on KU, right? drop 20, 25 on Texas Tech.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have they don't have the guy who could drop 20 plus on Baylor down at Waco. Like, they don't have that. Well, I shouldn't say 20, but 25-30. They don't have that guy right now on the roster the way that they did with Nigel Pack. They just don't. And I think if you look at it right now, Marquise Noel is your most proven scorer. You know, I think that's the way Nick Crumbles and Crumbles there. And when you look around, I think you can make an argument that right now Ish Masu is your second most proven scorer as well.
Well, yeah, that's the obvious one. Yep.
The difference here, the difference is for me, Eddie, is the guy when you look at Naquan Tomlin, one of the top JUCO guys in the country. You know, he averaged 11 points a game, along with 5 rebounds a game. But I think what was most attracting him, he shot over 50% from the field. You know, 54% from the field.
Yeah.
38% from three. 65% from the line, which isn't that bad for a big man. He's shown scoring ability at the JUCO level. The question is, can he bring that up to the Power 5 level? That's to be determined still. But he's proven it at a lower level that, you know, hey, I can shoot 11 points a game. I can, I can shoot over 50% from the field. There's some stuff here. Like, there's some stuff. And I'll be honest, I think Naquan Tomlin's going to be a starter. I think he's going to start for this team. I definitely think he's going to be a starter. I think he's going to be a guy that can, I think I've said this before on past podcasts, I think he's got the flexibility to be able to go down and play the 4th 5, but then at the same time, I feel like if they went small, he could go down and play like 4th 5, but if they decided to want to go big, like, I feel like he could potentially even go out and play the 3 just because his ability to shoot the 3 and scoring ability, so, and his ball handling skills, so I think that he gives them some flexibility and versatility. And so I think that there's something there. But the big thing for me is they're bringing guys in who are players that are, number one, coming from Power 5 programs. Bruce did not bring hardly anyone in from Power 5 programs and transfers last year. The two that I can recall, because I don't think Marquise Noel came from Power 5.
He did not. No, he did not. Nope.
The two were Mark Smith and Ish Masu. Mark Smith coming from Mizzou and Ish Masu coming from Wake Forest. And
yep, both of them
panned out.
Yep, both of them panned out. Yep, he got those right. Yeah.
Yeah, they panned out. K-State, look, every single transfer they've landed has been from Power 5. They got Gasson from Virginia Tech. They got Cam Carter there from Mississippi State.
Yep.
Mississippi State, where they got Cam Carter. And then they go and they get the other guy from the SEC.
Jarrell Colbert.
Yeah,
LSU.
Who was Colbert at? Was he LSU? Okay, there we go. I knew it was another. I knew Colbert was from SEC school. So you're getting. I forget. There's so many transfers. They all blend together.
Yep.
By the way, I think Colbert could potentially start too. I think he could be your starting center as well. I think Cam Carter's going to start too. I think that could potentially be your starting. I think there's a possibility you could have a starting five of Marquise Noel, Cam Carter, Naquan Tomlin, Colbert, and Ish. Like, I think that could be your five, but I wouldn't pencil it in because I still think that they're looking for some guys. But let me get back to my point here. I kind of derailed. These are guys who have got who had high rankings coming out of high school, right? Four stars. Guys who, were able to get to the Power 5. They just haven't necessarily done a lot at that level yet. And there's still some unknown and some question marks. I think the upside of these players is so much higher than the upside of the guys that Bruce Weber brought in. And I think it's almost like kind of taking a lotto ticket. You're like, hey, you know, we know all these aren't going to pan out. But we also know that there's a good likelihood that a couple of these guys are probably going to hit, and someone could hit big, and it could really benefit us in the long haul. And I really think that they're thinking more long-term than short-term with some of those guys as well. because they still got 3 years. Some got 3 years of eligibility. They've used their transfer, so they're kind of locked into K-State. They have to get a waiver if they want to transfer again. So I think that that's kind of the thought process. But I do think the talent level overall of what you're bringing in is higher than what Bruce, whoever was bringing in. What's scary is just the lack of scoring that you have, and that's the thing. And maybe we're underestimating Cam Carter. What Cam Carter? Cam Carter. He was a top. He was a top 50 recruit. Coming out of his class, a guy who scored a lot in high school, but he just didn't see the court. He just didn't see the court a lot at Mississippi State his first year. A lot of question marks. Maybe he comes to break out. Marquise Noel was supposed to be the backup point guard behind Nigel Pack, and he was supposed to be the guy that was supposed to spare him some minutes.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. Good point. Yep.
Yeah, he ended up turning into something none of us expected. And so, I think that's going to happen with someone, Eddie. I don't know who. I feel like Cam Carter could be the guy it could happen with. Maybe it's Colbert. Maybe it is Tom. Tomlin coming from Chipola or whatever college is called that he came from up there in New York. And, with all that said, I agree with you, Eddie. Do you have a team that you can take into a dogfight, right? Dogfight, that's a bad analogy, but take into a dogfight down in, down in Waco, right? Or you're going down to Galagriba, to play Mike Boyd and them down there, and that raucous crowd. I mean, do you have a team that can go down into the United Supermarket Center and play in what is the most difficult Big 12 road atmosphere in the Big 12? Not the most difficult, that's actually KU. The loudest road atmosphere in the Big 12.
Yep, do you have a school? By far.
You know what, Eddie, let's just take it a step further. Do you have a school that can, do you have a group of guys that can go into Allen Fieldhouse and prevent a 20-point loss? Because that's what happens every year they go to Allen
Every year, baby. Every year.
Every year, that's what happens. Do you have a team that can go in and hang with KU a little bit? And do you have that? Right now, it's hard to say, we do. They need more scoring. And as we talked about, they got 8 guys in the roster. I think that they'll sign maybe 3-4 more. That'd be my guess, just based on what Drum Tank said. We'll see. I don't think they're going to use all their scholarships. I think the Drum Tank's made it pretty clear that they're probably not going to use all of them. But they got to get some scoring. And Drum Tank said it. He said, we're waiting for guys to pull out of the NBA draft process, which the deadline was June 1st or May 31st. That was one of the two. We're waiting for guys to pull out because there's some guys that K-State likes. And they wanted to wait for them to pull out before they could actually pursue them. So now that deadline's come, you would assume K-State's pursuing some guys. Who? I don't know. You'd assume they're pursuing some guys, and there's probably some guys that are some proven scorers. I know that they've been linked to a couple guys, but there's nothing that's really concrete there. So I still think, Eddie, that there's time for them to land an impact player, an impact a wing, right, a guard. Someone who can bring some scoring, who can spell Marquise Noel, because right now, I'm with you, Eddie. I mean, I think Marquise Noel, if you, 17 to 20 points a game from him, I'm sorry. I don't see it. I don't see it from him. I see Marquise Noel as a 10 to 15 points a game scorer. I just think that I don't think you want Marquise forcing it. I don't think you want him to be a volume scorer. I think you want him to be an opportunistic scorer. I think he's better in that role, and if you can have someone who can provide some help, and so Marquise isn't having to jack up a ton of shots every game, I think that's your best scenario. You mentioned it with Ish. He struggled in the middle of the season there for a while, and he got hot late, but he had his struggles. You definitely want to bring in some more scoring. But I'm gonna be 100% honest, Eddie. First off, they do need to be more competitive. I don't think that a ninth place finish is going to sit well with the fans. I think they're over that. I think they want at least a competitive team. Does this team have to make the NCAA tournament? No. Does the team need to sniff the NCAA tournament? Yes.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. You said that before. Yep.
Yeah, it's true. You gotta at least sniff it. You have to get there. I don't think so. But if you finish ninth and you don't sniff it again, that's not going to be a good start.
Yeah, you're gonna be sitting here in podcast not happy if that happens.
No, you're 100% right. I will not be happy. I will not be happy in the podcast. I'll be like, fire drum tank. Who is this guy? Go get Brad Underwood. Throw the bank at him. No, I'm kidding. I will be mad. I won't do that. But I really think they're setting up for 2023, Eddie. I really do. You look at their 2023 class. They got some dudes that are legit in play for them in 2023 that could elevate, actually legit elevate that program. And also, with a lot of these guys they signed, Eddie, I think some of these guys are developmental. And that plays well in 2023. You know, I think we look at Taj Manning, you look at Dorian Finister, you look at guys like that. And I think those are guys that could be ready to really make an impact in 2023. Who knows? Maybe they do in 2022 as well. But I really think could be ready to roll in 2023. And also, maybe that's when you get Cam Carter peaking or you get Colbert peaking, right? Maybe you get them or Gasson, peaking. I mean, maybe you get that peak in 2023. After they have a year in the system, a year of coaching, right, from these coaches, coaching them up. I just think 2023 K-State is going to be the big jump year for K-State. I think that's the year where you're really going to see them go to the Jerome Tang level, so to speak. I think this first year is going to be, as you mentioned it, I think it's going to be, they'll be okay. I don't think they're going to be great. I just hope they're not horrible. I hope they're watchable, and I hope they're not losing by 35 points in some games. You know, that's what I'm hoping we don't see. But it's tough, Eddie. It's tough to get a read. Right now, you're just really so much of what you're thinking is just hinging on the coaches, in the hope that, we hope they can develop these guys. Like, they brought in these guys that have a lot of talent, a lot of potential, a lot more talent potential than guys Bruce Weber brought in. But can they coach them up? Can they get it out of them? I mean, you're optimistic, right? But you're putting a lot of K-State success into this coaching staff, coaching some dudes up. And they've proven that they can coach up in other spots, but it's a little different about the head man, right? So, like I said, these coaches, they're going to have to coach some guys up, Eddie. I don't think there's any denying that. They're going to have to coach the players up to have the type of season that they want to have. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with those other open spots, because I would expect that the rest of the guys that they bring in are going to be instant impact guys and some players that probably flirted with the NBA and decided not to go. And look, anyone who flirted with the NBA and decides to come back, that's a good basketball player. I'm here for that. I'm here for them to bring them in. And once again, I've heard a couple names. And who knows how much validity there is to them. But they were looking at North Carolina guard. They were looking at Boise State guard. They were looking at, I think somewhere down in Texas. I forget what school. But a guard down there and some proven players. Some players who have really done well. But the problem is there's a lot of competition for these NBA, for these players that we're looking at the NBA draft. So K-State's going to have to beat out a lot of schools to get some of these guys. So I think that's kind of where it gets difficult for them. But we'll just have to see. We'll have to see the way that plays out. But I'm with you, Eddie. I'm with you. The scoring is going to be scarce. It could be. But you know what? Look at Iowa State, Eddie. They did not score a lot last year. And our team builds the transfers. They won a lot of games, 50-some, 40-some. So, who knows? Maybe K-State will end up winning games 53-36, the way that Iowa State did. I mean, we're bringing Virginia basketball to Ramlage, Eddie. Or we're gonna bring Virginia basketball to Ramlage. But that's the truth. That's also the thing. That's the final thing I'll say, Eddie. In college basketball, you're not as reliant, right, on that scoring the way you are like the NBA, where everyone is such sharpshooters. They're so proficient in offense systems. it's a little different college. So if you can play good defense, you really can lock some of these teams down. So if K-State can be really good defensively, then they could put themselves in a position where they only need to average 6 some points a game. And, you know, potentially be in a good spot, too. So I think that's something to point out as well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially as they bring in more transfers.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
11:17 p.m. Central Time as we're rolling on this episode 102 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. In newsflash, we, for the first time, meaning we, meet the Braves, finally get to a 3-game winning streak. Whilst I was also listening to what you're talking about there as well. So, yep. So, that checked that off the box for the Braves. Now 26-27 on the year on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Back to K-State here real quick here before we hit the red zone here on this podcast. Yeah, I've been saying a lot about Tosh Manning, and people probably wondering, who is this Tosh Manning guy? Well, just to bring it full circle here, this was one of Bruce Weber's guys that signed last November. He is from Kansas City, Missouri area, Grandview, La Lemire School. He signed a national letter of intent back in November last year. Manning, 6'8", 215-pound, 15-pound forward. He'll be, obviously, he's here. So I should say in present tense, folks. And then in a statement here, obviously, I'll read what Bruce Weber said about Tosh Manning. He was really excited to have Tosh and his family here at K-State. Quote, he is not just a great fit for what we are looking for in this recruiting class from a precision standpoint, but just a great fit for our program. End quote. Tosh Manning was one of three Bishop Mage products that were named last year to the KBCA Class 4A All-State team, including two on the first team. He was also selected first team All-Eastern Kansas League as well. Down here, let's see, trying to pick out something else. I know I'm doing this like on the fly, I'm sorry. But yeah, okay, so let's just go from senior year here. He averaged 10 points, me, Tosh Manning, almost averaged 6 rebounds a game, almost average two blocks and assists and a half per game. That was actually his freshman year there. He was part of a pretty good teams over there at Grandview High School. And so I'm just reading off some of his numbers there. And so that's just some of his numbers that I just read it off here. He actually paced the team in scoring. Speaking of which, which I've been begging for this team, 16 a game, Tosh Manning I'm talking about, averaged 7 rebounds, 2 blocks there. That was during a COVID year there as well. During his career, high school career anyways, shooting 64% from the field there as well. Actually, that's from the free throw line, excuse me. And then he averaged 10 points a game. So, yeah, that's the correction there on that. I'm just reading off numbers on the fly. I apologize about that. But I've been saying his name for, like, the last, like, month and haven't really gotten an explanation of how he got here. Well, it was one of Bruce Weber's recruits, K-State Nation, for those of you wondering who Tosh Manning is. So, Tosh Manning's got the size a little bit there. 6'8", and at least he can score the basketball. That's what we're looking for there on that front there. So at least there's at least one holdover there from Bruce Weber's team. So it's not Nigel Pack, it's not Selton Miguel, it's not Davion Bradford who underperformed, Tosh Manning who stayed put. So we'll see if that can reward him a lot of playing time. Now obviously I'm not going to look, Alex already said Tomlin's going to start. I agree with him 100% on that. So the other two folks, who's going to start? I have no idea. I have to wait and see how camp goes for those guys and how the fall, getting prepared for the fall season for these guys. So,
if they bring in a legit scorer, maybe Cam Carter comes off the bench, maybe he'll, like, spare Noel, maybe. I think Colbert. I think Colbert started at center. I could be wrong, but I think he should start at center. And I don't know. I have a sneaky feeling that Cam Carter ends up starting. I could be wrong. But then again, if you're going that would mean that that's your starting five, and I don't think that's going to be the starting five.
I don't think that's starting five.
I think they're going to bring in a guy or two that will start. So, but I'm with you. I think Tomlin's going to start. I really do. So, maybe Cam Carter won't start. I think Colbert will start at center, though. Mm-hmm. You know, Cam Carter's coming off the bench. I think you're doing pretty good. I mean, look, you got a guy like that coming off the bench. That's not necessarily a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all.
No, that's not a bad thing.
I think he's got potential to be really, really good. And I honestly wouldn't be too terribly torn up if he was a starter on this roster. You'd be a little small. You'd be a little small at the guard play.
Yeah.
You know, Marquise Noel's not very big. We know that. and so you'd be pretty small. But you know, that's one thing that you've noticed about this, Eddie. This K-State team is really big. Remember how small Bruce Weber's teams were? Now you've got all these guys that are, like, super athletic. They're 6'8", like, plus. Like, K-State's just really long and athletic. And it's just different than what they were. They're small with Marquise Noel. And if they go Cam Carter, they'll be small in the backcourt. But they're just really long, lanky, athletic. Like, that's what they have that Bruce Weber's teams didn't have, which I'm curious to see how that translates.
Yeah. We'll see how all floods. There's going to be plenty to talk about with basketball as well as football coming up this fall. So a lot of intriguing topics to talk about as we continue on this 2022 journey ahead of Jerome Tang's first full season here at K-State Manhattan, Kansas. Meanwhile, next week for the track and field team, another reminder for you guys, at least 14 from my count, will be part, and that actually includes the relay teams, will be taking part in the NCAA Outdoor Championships next week. It's going to be a four-day event there in the NCAAs next week as well. So I'll definitely have coverage of that on the Purple Project Podcast daily next week. So you track and field fans out there are interested and following along, definitely keep track of it on the Twitter page there for the K-State Track and Field Squad. Or you can tune in, download, subscribe to the Pro Project Podcast daily and get the dailies there as well. So looking forward to seeing what they can do out there. And oh, by the way, it's out there in Eugene, Oregon. So that's near you, Alex, out there in San Diego, California.
One state up.
Yeah, so definitely looking forward to seeing what they do there on that front. But yeah, a lot of intriguing stuff like football. The anticipation for football, hey, they could be really good, or they could really stick up the pooch. But on the men's basketball side, there's still some, you're probably going to go through some growing pains there. Women's basketball has the opportunity to be same as the football team, in my opinion. I've been really high on them. As well,
they need to have a big year. I would agree, because this is you know, you've got a superstar for one more year, right?
Yeah,
you've got to cash in on that. Kind of how I feel with K-State a little bit, football a little bit too.
Yeah,
superstar, and this could potentially be your last year. Granted, they got multiple super. They got multiple potential superstars in my opinion on the field, but with the women's team, like you've got like a D superstar. Like you've got to, take advantage of that.
Yeah, they added a transfer, Gregory, Gabby Gregory, who can score the basketball from Oklahoma, a grad transfer, I believe.
That's big.
So that's big for them. They needed somebody else to score the basketball. Take the pressure off. Yep. You have the same thought process. Take the pressure off of Ilka Lee and Serena Sundell. You have her back. Sundell, I'm talking about. You have the Glenn twins back as well. You have a lot of potential right there as well. So, yeah, you could go two ways with them as well. Track and field. Could be doing some big things next week as well. Baseball, they still have a little work to do. Soccer, they're still in that little phase there of okay, can they take the next step? We'll be talking about that a little bit more. Soccer season will be coming around the corner as well as football season. So, yeah, there's volleyball. In my opinion, I just talked about this in one of the dailies that came out this week, which, oh, by the way, speaking of that, after the track and field championships wrap up for K-State up in Eugene, for the summer, they're going to be going down to, I probably already said this already, we've talked about so many talk about topics already tonight, they'll be going down to 3 days a week. That includes football Friday. I'm keeping that section. I like it. So that those will be, Fridays will be just football talk. There, the rest will be big news if recruiting happens, like Avery Johnson stuff. Definitely, if any breaking news were to go down, I will hop on the mic and get after it here on the Pro Project Podcast. So up until soccer and football season start really ramping it up, we'll be going down to 3 days a week on that. And oh, by the way, is presented to you by AutoFest 2022. Coming to Manhattan, Kansas, August 6th for the Rally in the Valley. We're setting up shop behind Midwest Car Collection Museum on Anderson Avenue. There's a separate episode of this event on one of the dailies up now. Go look for it in your archives for those interested. I said it already in the beginning. I'll keep on mentioning it to you guys all the way up to the event as well. So again, a lot of potential this upcoming athletic year for K-State. And last year we're sitting here talking about they need something big to happen. Well, the women's basketball team took a step forward. Football still was, at least they're consistent. Another 8-win season. Danny, I think we well established this. I think they need to capitalize on this talent. Like Ayoka Lee, Deuce Vaughn might not be back for a senior year. You got to capitalize on it. Adrian Martinez, if he can live up to that potential. Colin Klein, Adrian Martinez, pretty much about the same player as Colin was player here at K-State. Similar. Very, very similar. If the stars align, again, you have to, let's not forget now, in a perfect world, everything would be rosy peachy, but you have to deal with like injuries and things like that. You can somehow avoid those, which K-State was not able to do in spring practice. They had to cut it short, get their guys healthy, especially on the defensive line, which they could cause some problems this year. I think it might get Khalid Duke back. Obviously, we know what Felix can do. Nate Matlack as DY, a.k.a. Derek Young, talked about in their podcast, could be a big-time sleeper. Nobody's talking about him much at all. Nate Matlack, if he takes another step forward, it's going to be a problem for opposing offensive lines in the Big 12 come football season. We can go on and on about it, but just some notes.
There's so much to break down that football team.
Yeah, there's some, like I said, we're kicking the can down the road at the save. Obviously, we'll have Keelan back on. And possibly, I'm thinking, hopefully get another football player on the podcast as well. I haven't talked to him yet, but I've written down a couple of candidates as well from the podcast. So, but yeah, something K-State fans, K-State Nation should be looking forward to. A lot of coverage, different perspective on the Pro Project Podcast, talking about K-State sports. We have finally, after all that, hit the red zone now. To cap off episode 102 of the PPPW edition, NBA Finals started last night. That's why we didn't record last night. Working around that, game one, stunner. Boston Celtics, you thought they're done out of the fish, out of water there in the third quarter, which Golden State, up until that point, owned opposing offenses or opposing teams in these playoffs. Dominated third quarter. Outscored Boston 38-24 in the third. And they're leading by like 12 or 13 in the fourth quarter. Boston punches Golden State in the mouth right off the bat in the fourth quarter. And then Golden State's wheels came off. No scoring from them for most of the quarter. Boston outscored Golden State 40-16. Damn. I mean, they really, they pounded. When they took the lead, they did not take the foot off the gas. They're the Golden State, and Golden State turning to Boston, or some lines of that. But big story there. Boston steals game one of the NBA Finals last night there. Boston, is riding that train right now. This team, I think you mentioned it last week, and you picked Boston to win this series. And oh, by the way, obviously, the last time we talked, they were getting ready to play Miami Heat in Game 6 or Game 7, one of the two. But anyways, Boston, they got away with one with Miami Game 7, right? They nearly self-destructed that lead with 2 minutes to go in that game there. Jimmy Butler, transition three, which I had no problem with that at all. Missed it off front iron the rim. Jeff Van Gundy had a problem with it, saying he should have drove Al Horford right up to the basket, which, again, I do see that, too, as well, because you had Horford backing up there, too. But Jimmy Butler felt like, okay, knock this down, place going crazy, but instead off the front iron, and Boston gets away with it there. But well-deserved, though. Seriously, though, Boston riding that wave there. They're once under 500, kind of like the Atlanta Braves last year. Turn it around. Here they are, taking game one of the NBA Finals on the road. Why don't you? Golden State has been in this position many times. I mean, we talked about it off recording, Alex, that this is going to be a long series, but for Boston to come in there, down 12 in the fourth quarter, this was a back-and-forth game for most of the game, actually, until that third quarter where Golden State put on the gas pedal, but Boston Celtics said, you ain't getting away from us that easy. We've been through too much adversity in this postseason, and Boston with a knockout punch in game one.
Jimmy Butler, shoot that, no problem. No problem with him shooting that at all. Jimmy Butler's a superstar, man. You know what I mean? Let him do what he does. That'd be like me being like, the Blazers and Dame Lillard misses one of his 30-footers or, one of his really long threes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how could he take that? Well, come on, man. Like, that's his shot. Like, we've seen him win playoff series taking that shot. Like, I can't credit, you can't. Eat your cake and have it too, or whatever the hell the saying. I don't know what the saying is, but whatever. Point being, I don't have problems with Jimmy Butler's name. That was a hot talking point, by the way. You were correct about that. Boston, you mentioned it. Man, have they been gritty and resilient. They played two game sevens. They played some really difficult teams. We talked about this last week on the podcast. They've won two game sevens. They have beaten the... Here we go again, trying to do that. They beat the Nets. They beat the Bucks. Granted, Middleton did get hurt, and then they beat the Heat. And that is quite a difficult road before them. And now they're playing the Warriors, so obviously get much easier. But it kind of reminds me a little bit of what the Bucks did last year, just because the Bucks, they went to seven games a couple times. They had some deep series, and they played some good competition, and they got those wins, and it felt like they were really battle tested going into the finals against the Suns. And even when they got down 2-0, they didn't blink. They've been there. And they turned around and they were able to get that series. So I think that's a battle-tested Boston team. And they've just been through so much, some adversity. I think you saw in the fourth quarter, right? You get down double digits going into the fourth quarter on the road against the Warriors, a team that's won many NBA championships recently, and didn't blink, didn't faze them. They came out and they blitzed them, man. They blitzed them, and the Warriors couldn't do anything. And you mentioned it; they didn't take their foot off the gas. They kept their foot on the gas. They won that game. They won that game by double digits. They won that game by double digits. So they really flipped the script. And I think that's in part because of I mentioned it. They've been playing really well in the second half of the season, and that's just carried over into the postseason. And it really really showed there. So super impressive for them. For the Warriors, I don't think you can bank on that again. If that happens again, I can't see the Warriors going on a stretch like that, they got too many good scores. You got Steph, obviously, right? We saw 21 in the first quarter, something insane like that. You got Steph. you got Steph there. You've got Klay. Klay Thompson may not be what he used to be, but you still got Klay. You've got Draymond, who's a disruptor. You've got Wiggins. You've got
Jordan Poole. Yeah, you got Poole.
Jordan Poole,
yep.
You've got players all over.
And the player that I mentioned last week on this podcast, Andre Iguodala, came back. Yeah.
Dude, he is the complete wild card, man. This is like when Andre Iguodala steps in, he turns that dial up, right? And just becomes just different player, man. Just different player. And so, you just can't. Like I said, they're going to make shots. They're going to get stops because they're also a really good defensive team. But you can't bank on one scoring 120 again. Second, you can't bank on holding them under 110 again. That's tough to do. So look, I picked the Celtics. I stand by my pick. I still think the Celtics are going to win. I do think it's going to be a long series, though. And I think that Golden State's going to get game two. We were talking about this a little bit off air, Eddie. They're just, number one, I just think they're too good. And number two, they're too good to lose both their home games, in my opinion, there. And number two, they just have too much experience in these situations to go down 2-0, going to Boston. This team with Steph, Klay, Draymond, Iggy, I can't see that team who's been there through the trenches of all this playoff experience. I just can't see them allowing themselves going down to Boston, down 2-0. I just can't see it, especially when you look on paper and these teams look even. They really look even to me. So I think it balances out. I think that they get the win in game two. I think they go back to Boston and with it 1-1, and then I think Boston retakes control of the series there. Although, I do think it's going to be a long series. Like I said to you, it wouldn't surprise me if this thing went 6-7 games. And to me, I kind of feel like Boston will close this series out in San Francisco.
Ooh.
That's what it feels like to me, because this team has won game sevens, and they have not done the conventional, like, win at home thing. Like, they've gone on the road and gone win. I just feel like that's how it's going to end again. I feel like they're going to go get a game on the road and feel like, oh, they're back in San Francisco. Here we go. Golden State's going to take it, because we've heard this like every series with the Celtics. The Celtics are going to come out, they're going to snatch it. That's kind of what I feel, but series is off to a good start.
Yes, it is. Yep. Yes, it is. Steph Curry, 30 finished the game one with 34 points. Obviously, when this comes out, it will come out tomorrow night ahead of game two, which is game two is on Sunday night, folks. And I'll have to see the next week's schedule, how that lines up. That will finalize what we do as far as recording the weekly goes for next week's episode 103 of this podcast. Jason Tatum did not do much, but he was definitely a factor, though. 13 assists, 12 points. He still got a double-double, though. 12 points, 13 assists. Al Horford, huge, playing in his first finals.
Yeah, he played great.
And I've actually kind of followed his career. He graduated from the, he was part of those back-to-back championships for Florida Gators. And what a ride. This is actually his second stint at Boston. First finals appearance in his 15-year career. Got rewarded last night. 26 points for him, knocking down big threes. 6 of 8 from downtown. 6 threes from downtown. Marcus Smart added 4. Jaylen Brown added 2. And then the play of White off the bench. 21 points. He knocked down 5 threes. So definitely the three ball was going in for Boston last night, and somebody told me that, you know, hey, it could go game to game. You can knock down all these threes first time around. When you jack up threes next time, might not go in. So you probably said that for Golden State. Example, last night, fourth quarter, go stone cold for like 6 minutes. Yeah, you do that any station in the game, you're going to lose the game, especially in the fourth quarter, where we get basically almost double the outscoring point there, 40-16. That's just unheard of right there. At least in quite some time in the postseason, by the way. So Golden State back in the NBA Finals for the first time in a couple years. Got a rude awakening last night. So I don't see Golden State. I'm with you, Alex. I don't see Golden State losing game two. I'll be shocked if Boston goes up 2-0, knowing that Boston goes home. And Boston has not, and yes, that's going to be a hectic of a atmosphere over there, up there in Boston, for sure. We all know the Celtics in there, they've won a lot of championships. We understand that, but you can't go down 2-0 going up there. That's just, you're asking yourself, obviously you have the experience there, but hey, I mean, you can't give Boston all that confidence, though, going back home. But at least, though, if it does get split, Boston did what it needed to do already. Now you're playing with house money, as we all like to call it, there with game two. We can even put Golden State even further trouble. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to quickly say, too, I think the two X factors, you mentioned Al Horford, the way he's played, not just in that game, but in the series. He's been huge. He's a huge for the Celtics in the postseason. I think the other thing, Jaylen Brown. I think there's a lot of questions. What are you going to get, Jaylen Brown? Like, you know, he's the number two guy to Jason Tatum, but can he be consistent enough in the playoffs? And Jaylen Brown's been great. He's been great.
Yeah, he's been good. Really good.
He's been great throughout the playoffs. And he has been consistent, and he has done what you would hope he would do, be able to pick up the team and really carry the weight when Jason Tatum doesn't have that game, right? He's not having that crazy Jason Tatum that game that we all expect, i.e. last night when he went 3-for-17 from the field. But Jaylen Brown picked it up, 23, and had 24 points from the field, and he was plus 22. So I mean, that's just what he's been doing in the playoffs. He's been consistent. I think that's part of the reason why Boston's where they are, is because he's taking that step. And then you throw that in and you mix it in with what Horford's been able to do. He's given Boston better balance there. But again, you know, you look over to Golden State and they got a lot of balance as well. And as great as Steph was there in the first quarter, really cooled off. He actually finished -9, from the field, the plus minus. So you just can't expect that again, especially when you look at Golden State and their entire bench. Well, not their entire bench, their entire starting lineup was technically in the negatives, in the plus minus, and all of their entire bench was the positive. You can't. That's not going to happen again. That's too good of a lineup. You're not going to get a shooting percentage of 44% again. Like I said, seems too good. Finals, they know it's on the line. I just don't think you can expect that again in Vancouver.
Wow. Good stuff. So we're going to leave that right there. Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 102. About to be in the books as we record this, June 3rd, 2022, presented to you by the Rally in the Valley, going down here in Manhattan, Kansas, August 6th, behind the Midwest Car Collection Museum, behind the building right there on Anderson Avenue. Again, you want more information, I said it earlier, and there's also a separate episode of it as well. We'll be continuing to promote this event as well, especially for those that are wanting to travel out of state as well. I know we have a listening audience out of state as well. So definitely make sure you keep it locked here. We'll continue to promote it. So we're definitely excited to present it to you. Let me pull it up one last time here by the Kansas JCI Senate in Broken Studs Motorsports. And we're proud to be one of the proud representatives promoting this big time car show event. You love classic vehicles, this is the place to be right here. Alex, we have laid the groundwork for the upcoming weeks, summer weeks of this podcast. Last final thoughts, it's been a good show tonight.
It's been a great show, Eddie. It's been a great show. I have enjoyed it. It's been so good that I am now recharging my laptop. But yeah, it was great. And like I said, you know, we're beginning to enter into a little bit of a slower time, and I think it's going to be great because we're going to be able to dive into some topics that we haven't been able to dive into. And another one we haven't even touched on tonight that we have scratched surface on in some other episodes is NIL, especially when we start talking about recruiting and K-State trying to finish filling out the basketball roster, and then also football. NIL, that is the thing.
Mm-hmm, yep.
That is sealing the deal for a lot of these recruits, and that's in a whole other discussion that we haven't even gotten into, but we have gotten into, like I said, some of the past podcasts, so feel free to go back and listen to some of those. There's some nuggets there, but yeah, Eddie, I'm just eager to see what happens. You mentioned Avery Johnson. I'm really eager to see what happens in that recruitment. I think it could just essentially be really, really historic for K-State if they could land him, because golly, Eddie, the struggles that Coach Kleiman's staff has had in bringing the top level talent in the state of Kansas and in the Kansas
we've also talked about that. Man, yeah, bringing.
Yes, we have talked about it. They got two big ones, right? They got two big ones in the spring, and they beat out Iowa State for both of them. That was huge.
Huge.
That was huge.
Yep.
It was a huge start. But now you've got Avery Johnson, who's like the blue chip QB, right? He's looking at Oregon. He's looking. There's other schools that are potentially in play, depending where Archie Manning goes. They just beat a USC for a Kansas kid.
Yep.
Should have played linebacker. Granted, that is 2022, not 2023. But you're looking. You've got Dylan Edwards who's in play, the running back there, and so there's a lot of talent in Kansas City. There's a lineman from the state of Kansas. I mean, it could end up being a really historic type of recruiting class. You could really turn the tides for him, Eddie. And I really think that Avery Johnson could kind of be open the floodgates, because he's probably gonna be the first one to commit. Of them all, and if he commits to K-State,
could be a lot of dominoes.
And then, you know, you can have your QB as a teacher. No offense to anybody else in there, but, you know, Avery Johnson, I mean, he's a coveted beast. A lot of teams want him. And so, again, a lot for us to break down on that. We'll have time to. I think it'll be a busy recruiting month in June, basketball and football related, so I'm eager to discuss it with you, and I hope also all our listeners have a great Memorial Day weekend. And, I shouldn't say happy Memorial Day, because we're honoring, it's there to honor those who have fallen, but I hope that people are able to remember those who were lost serving the country, and we're able to spend some quality time with their families or friends, whoever they may have been. Get a little R&R from work, and now, yeah, here we are, Eddie. It's June, so let's go, man. It's our time.
Yep, that's right. Let's go, indeed. That is a good way to end episode 102 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Glad you guys are on board. If you're not on board to the Purple Project Podcast, this is the perfect time to join the train right now. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and tell a fellow K-Stater about this podcast, whether it's a student, big fan of K-State, alumni, anywhere. Make sure you continue to spread the word. We appreciate the support. Alex, my friend, we'll do this again next week, sir. It's been a good one.
Sounds good. I look forward to it, Eddie.
Listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all on the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!